In 2015, Bruce Jenner proclaimed himself a her, and he created a public spectacle that has challenged the very nature of God's design for humanity. In the last 3 years, we've witnessed the shockwaves of a movement that has demanded an individual has the right to identify themselves as a man or a woman, no matter what physical characteristics they're born with into this world. But can a boy really be trapped inside a girl's body? What would be the result of this transgender movement, this transgender moment, as it's being called, on our society and culture? And finally, how should a Christian respond to this transgender moment? Welcome to TW Now. My name is Jonathan McNair. We're glad to have you with us on the program today. And I'd like to welcome our guest, first of all, Mr. Gerald Weston. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And Mr. Stuart Wachowicz, and also glad for you to be here as well.
Thank you very much.
You may have seen Mr. Wachowicz on the Skype in a component of our program before in the past, and now he's actually with us in the studio, so glad to have you with us.
Pleasure to be here.
So I'd like to begin with a little bit of a background to this current scenario that we're facing with this transgender moment. Can you gentlemen tell us a little bit about how we got where we are today?
Well, I think it's a long-term process. It's been going on for a long time. But behind it, there's a certain anarchy, a certain desire to tear down the fabric of our society, the traditions of our society. And when we get to the transgender, we see what happened with the same-sex marriage, and as soon as that was accomplished, then immediately it went to the transgender.
Yes, I think that what we've seen over the past decades is a movement that is really an outgrowth of the philosophy of social deconstruction, Heidegger's social deconstruction model, which led to feminism and some other movements which really wished to deconstruct the existing social order in order to create a social order that would be more amenable to a particular way of life or a particular philosophy. And in part the feminist philosophy has been picked up on by the LGBTQ folks, and that is also one of the things they want to do, to deconstruct the old order of family as a man and a woman with children, and to create a much broader definition that would enable their full acceptance in society. And there's a very aggressive push in that particular area in the present time for us to be totally affirming of all lifestyles, whether or not they conflict with cultural or religious mores of the past.
I'd like to add here, too, that there have been certain individuals who have been behind that movement, but how does it gain traction in our modern world? And I would say that Darwinism has had a profound effect. The need for life without God is something that has allowed people to be changed into this particular persuasion. Otherwise, they'd have a hard time being persuaded.
Okay, so in terms of, let's say, a timeline of how we got to this point where this movement has hit the headlines. Do you see any progression of some of our social, let's say, mores, our ways of thinking that have brought us to this place? I mean, obviously it hasn't just come out of nowhere. What are some steps along the way, then, and what has it done to our society that would put us in this place? Any thoughts about that, in terms of the family, or in terms of relationships? Any thoughts?
Well, perhaps to follow up on what Mr. Weston has mentioned, once society began to question whether or not we are a function of creation, whether or not the religious writings such as the Bible are indeed inspired, once that becomes a doubtful construct in the minds of people, then the laws and rules of behavior that were set in place in those various books become questioned or ignored. Once a society turns away from the recognition of an absolute source of truth, an absolute source of what is right and what is wrong, such as that which is identified by the Ten Commandments, which is found in the Bible, for example. Once those are discarded, then what is right and wrong? Society has to determine that. And since social Darwinism has, as you mentioned, has taken over, then what we're seeing happening is society deciding for itself what is right and wrong based on the particular mood of the period, which means what is right and wrong today, even within the construct of these new gender movements, may well be looked upon as evil in the future. There is no stability. We understand that in the biblical sense, so you mentioned what should a Christian believe, the Bible is very clear that man and woman, the only kind of sexual relation or intimate relation was between a man and a woman who were married to each other in a publicly witnessed ceremony. And anything else between man and woman or between men and men or women and women was considered wrong. And of course, from the biblical perspective, that was put in place to ensure a happy and stable society. And so what we're seeing as we move away from that is a society with greater levels of instability, greater levels of unhappiness, greater levels of suicide, greater levels of social disruption. And so it is a progression that I think comes out of a rejection of absolute values.
Let me add, for the sake of our audience, if you have any questions on this topic, I can't promise that we'll get to them all, but we've already had a couple of come in. And the one I can see on my screen right now is where we're going to be headed in the last half of our program. So just hold on. We will get to some of what we're going to come to as the solution to the problem. But we want to address the problem. What is it? Where did it come from? What are the elements of it? Because in order for us to really address how to approach it, we have to understand where it came from and what are the nuts and bolts of this issue. And that's what we try to do in this program, really, is wrestle with issues, the nuts and bolts, and then provide reasonable answers that are based on the source of truth. So back to the discussion. If you have a question, please go ahead and send it in to us. We appreciate that. What are some of the techniques that then were used to push this different mindset that is untethered from any solid, certainly biblical values, or frankly, any basis of morality at all, the traditional morality, and certainly biblical values. So what are some of the techniques that were used to facilitate that, Mr. West?
Well, I think one of the greatest tools, and it goes back in my memory to at least the 1960s, is a tool of political correctness. It probably goes back further than that. But the change of the language. I was a janitor working at the college I was going to, and they came in one day and told me I was a custodian. Now, I still did the same thing, cleaning toilets, washing windows, but now I had a new name. We talked about instead of a housewife, she became a homemaker, then a domestic engineer. And all that seems kind of funny and it seems kind of okay. But when you look at it, they stopped talking about husband and wife, and now it was your spouse, your partner, all these different terms. And so they're changing the language. And they've been very successful. And when they talk about who they are, we're talking about leftists. And I would like to clarify that, because sometimes we use the term left and right politically. But there are those who are leftists who are not liberal, as Kirsten Powers calls them. They're illiberal. These are individuals who are absolutists who do not want to discuss issues. They want to force their ideas on others. And they're bullies in reality. And you see that on our university campuses. But when they start changing the language, it affects how we think, and we as individuals can help them by falling prey to that language and using it.
So really, what we're finding, this is why we're addressing this in the program, again, to our audience, is because there is a pressure today that demands that we adjust our language, we adjust our thinking, we have to actually kowtow to ways of thinking and ways of communicating. And I think those who have children in schools, those who deal in the workplace and in our audience are sensing that every day. I think I find myself sometimes catching myself and saying something that is, you might say, politically correct because it's so ingrained. What else about language has become a major part that's actually shaped the thinking in our society today? We were talking about some different issues of gender and the way it's used and so on before. Could you add to that?
Well, even in school systems and many jurisdictions now across North America and both Canada and the United States.
Excuse me. For the sake of our audience, maybe Mr. Wachowicz could give a little background in terms of working with schools. Give a little background to our audience, because he has quite a lot of experience with school systems.
Now's not so the time to be modest.
Explain a little bit about your background.
I was a high school principal, an elementary and junior high principal for a number of years, and then later a director of curriculum and instruction for one of Canada's largest school systems with about 85,000 students. And in that, we saw the early beginnings of some changes. Today, however, there is much more pressure. And, for example, there are systems where principals are told no longer to use the word mother or father, but just parent, A or B. And, well, this seems well and good maybe to some people. There are a lot of messaging there that can be harmful. And, just in terms of school systems themselves and how they are being used by the groups that you've described, even as a tiny minority, they are enabled now to push their agenda of promotion of their ideas right from the kindergarten level on through grade 12. For example, some schools in some jurisdictions, some systems actually, provincial or state systems, will now deny parents access to information if their child has engaged in any counseling for gender-related matters. There are provinces in Canada where there is just an open cultivation of gay gender behavior among students as early as kindergarten against the parents' wishes, but the parents are not informed, and they may not be informed. Now, this is a radical erosion of rights, and aside from this issue, I think there's another issue that's superimposed here. And that is, rights can be eroded from one issue, but later on they may affect us in many, many other ways. Mm-hmm. And many of these things are contrary. For example, in 1948, the United States, Canada, and the founding members of the United Nations signed a document called the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And in section 26-3 of that article, it reads, parents have a prior right to choose the kind of education given to their children. Mm-hmm. Now that has become tacitly a constitutional right in those countries that have signed that. Mm-hmm. But this was signed after World War II, and the reason it was signed in 1948 after the war is because we had seen dictators, fascist or communist dictators, indoctrinating children in ways that were contrary to parents' wishes and beliefs, or the beliefs of their culture or their religion, all to control the student, even against the will of the parent. Mm-hmm. And that's why that was signed. 1976, the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, Article 18.4, which our countries were signatures of, it commits the country to respect the liberty of parents to, and I quote, ensure the religious and moral education of their children is in conformity with their own convictions. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, when a school system goes to a religious school, as is happening in many jurisdictions on this continent, and tells them, you must teach this about this particular agenda, when it is completely contrary to their religious beliefs, is a constitutional violation. And yet, we do not see a groundswell of opposition rising up to it out of fear of the media. And the media has been controlled by groups apparently that are trying to force the one side of the agenda, mm-hmm. even if the rights that are eroded will eventually negate some of their own rights. And this gender coercion, as I would call it, is extent in our societies, it is eroding our freedom of speech, as the university issues are, freedom of expression are showing, religious rights and the ability to express that, our freedom of association, and even due process in the rule of law is all at risk. And this is a major issue, and it's one of the mechanisms by which these ideas are being coerced upon a society.
So in other words, we're talking about intolerance for those who actually have values that are not in line with, when we talk about transgenderism, maybe we should just define it real quickly. Well, we're talking about someone who, based on feelings, or in other words, based on their psychological makeup, have decided they are not a boy, when indeed they are, through their all their physical design. And so in other words, it's based on feelings. We talked about that earlier, correct? I mean, want to add to that?
Well, even the word gender. The word gender, if you go back 50 years, did not apply to living creatures. The word gender does not, in linguistic construct, apply to a living person. Gender applies to language, whether in some languages, a tasse in French is masculine or feminine, or a window. There's gender in language. That's what the term meant. It has been sort of pirated to this new application, and what gender has become, or sex, we used to call it, one is either a male sex or a female sex, and there's no in-between. But what the gender movement has done is changed sexuality from a biological reality to a psychological desire. And by shifting that and by inculcating that in law, we are injecting a significant amount of confusion upon society.
So here's a question from our audience. I think we should go right to this then. It's a follow-up in what you were talking about in terms of education. How should we then address the education issue of transgenderism? We started to do that a little bit. They are now passing laws to teach sexual immorality in public schools. So what we're saying, our rights to be able to actually believe as we do and without being fettered by bullying, we're those who do not believe that are being pushed into a corner and as we've talked about here. But how would you advise parents then who are having to deal with their children facing this push, as you've been talking about, in the schools? It's one of our questions. Again, they're now passing laws to teach sexual immorality in public schools. What do we advise people? How do we approach this?
It's a very difficult question because in some countries they've banned homeschooling, such as Germany. I'm not sure all the countries, but I know Germany has. Many parents are pulling their children out of school. I think that whether they stay in the classes or not, a parent needs to be engaged with the teachers, needs to know what the teachers are teaching. There are a lot of teachers out there that don't go along with this, and they're struggling how to address the subject themselves. But I think there has to be a pushback. And I'm not talking about a violent pushback, I'm not talking about rioting, I'm not talking about picketing, but at least talking to the administrators that I don't want my children being taught this, and if they are, then there are some legal considerations that we could go to, and I suppose that Mr. Robbins more...
Let me follow up on that. You know, as I was growing up, we did not, as a matter of our religious beliefs, as we teach as the Living Church of God, we did not keep Christmas. It was a pagan holiday. We keep God's holy days from the Bible. And when it came time to Christmas time, we asked our teachers for permission not to be included in certain Christmas activities. We get a note from our parents to say, this is a matter of our religious beliefs, and so therefore we asked to be excused. And they were liable by law. They were not liable, but they were required to allow that, and I found that always they did. I don't remember a single time where they did not allow that. Is this a similar thing where our children can be equipped by their parents to actually say, look, this is they're not to be part of this activity because of what's being taught? Or is that something that's doable?
I'd like to jump in on that. It's more subtle than that. For example, in Alberta, the Alberta Teachers Association, I've seen their manuscript that they are teaching the teachers. They want to inject this in every single class, and they give examples, 150 pages or so, of how to do it. For example, math. You would think, well, how can math teach all these transgenderism? Well, they start out by saying something like a word question. Mary and Susie are getting married. Mm-hmm. And then it goes on from there and buying announcements at this price or that price, which is the better deal. So they're subtly putting these thoughts into the minds of children. And I think that every parent has to be very active in teaching their children what is happening and question them and explaining those things. But you can't run from it. Mm. It's everywhere.
Yes. Yeah, it is. It's a... we have a fundamental right in our societies that has been fought for. To be able to express a polite but dissenting opinion, a respectful but dissenting opinion. That is fundamental to our nation's history, whether you're Canadian or American or wherever. That is being threatened. And children are being forced into this venue in a number of ways in a number of states and provinces. I think the one way is, as Mr. Weston said, there needs to be that instruction of the child at home to ensure they understand the rights and wrongs and what is our belief, and not to be ashamed of it. Mm-hmm. But secondly, we need to be able also to remember we do have a right to express our opinion, whether it's to schools, but the school itself often doesn't have the authority to change. But certainly to the school board level, and especially to the state or provincial education level, the senior individual, whether Secretary of Education or Minister of Education, needs to be informed by enough people that this is unacceptable and it is a constitutional violation. And that's very clear in law. And that needs to be stated repeatedly, politely, respectfully, and firmly. And there are other things that a parent can do. You mentioned a note exempting from Christmas activities, a letter from the parents. And we actually did develop that for the province of Alberta through one organization. It was done by some of our lawyers, of a letter that a parent can sign requesting the student be exempted from matters of sexuality, education and sexuality in schools. The old type of sex ed, people could argue one way or the other, was more or less informational, but this new type of sex ed is really targeting the promotion of a certain idea, whether or not the parent agrees.
Here's an example. One of the questions or one of the comments from our listeners was talking about how thoroughly soaked even our schools are in it, and we can stand up as we're talking about, stand up as we can in a respectful but firm way about what is right and what is wrong. But here's what they said. My son has long eyelashes. He is 9. He came home from school saying the kids called him mixed gender because of his long eyelashes. Now, where did that come from? Like you're saying, it's pumped into the minds of even little children so that they begin to have thoughts and understandings of or a perception of gender that is fluid and neutral and mixed and all these things that you would never hear. Not too long ago, 9-year-old kids wouldn't talk about something like that.
Yeah.
But it's thorough. So standing up, being able to make sure we teach children thoroughly, as we're actually supposed to, biblically speaking, to teach our children, not leave it to the state or leave it to someone else to teach them. What are the suggestions? Let's say even in the workplace, some of our audience who are battling with a pressure in the workplace, because again, the topic is what should be a Christian's response. How do we handle this? Mr. Weston, something you could add to this?
Well, I think in even teaching our children, let me go back to that just very briefly, they need to know why something is wrong. We can't just say it's wrong. they need to know why. That, for example, as Paul McHugh, which is a distinguished service professor at Johns Hopkins University, has come out and said that this is a very bad idea. And the Johns Hopkins actually stopped doing sex reassignment surgery because they found it was not working. It was not helping people in the long run. And since then, the Karolinska Institute in Sweden has shown that after 10 years of sex reassignment surgery, that the suicide rate is 20 times greater than in the regular population. Mm. So I think we need to give our children age-specific information, but they need to know why. Now, in terms of your specific question...
In regard to, let's say, the workplace or adults and dealing with each
right.
other. Because it is a pressure on us. We were talking about this before. Yeah. It becomes so much of a pressure that adults, after a while, begin to actually accept right. it virtually.
Well, I think that one example, and it varies depending on where one works and what one's position is, but I'm encouraged by the fact that there are people like Jordan Peterson who have stood up and said, I will not call a single person they. It's either he or she. And he's pushing back. And, you know, it's interesting when people push back in that way, depending, again, on what their position is and where they are. When the press tried to destroy him, he's become a celebrity out there. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a time for someone who has strong beliefs in this way to stand up and push back. And what I've seen in general in society is those that are willing to stand up are not as easily run over as those that just give in.
You know, and that's why it's important. We see, I mean, getting to the scriptures, it's a bit of a different topic, but when God begins to work with someone's mind and actually begins to call them, give them an understanding of truth as opposed to error, what happens? He draws them and draws them into contact with other people who believe the same things, and for encouragement, too. One of the reasons why God works with humans that way, I think it's encouraging. We can talk about this here and be of the same mind, and I should mention for our audience, if you are struggling with issues like this, you're not alone. There are other people who actually do want to go to the authority, which is the Bible, and want to live by those things and actually be with other people, be around other people to gain encouragement and strength. And that's proper and right. You don't have to be an island out there. There are other people who believe the same way. Certainly, we're making clear how we believe and teach on this. And you can read further on our website and our articles and telecasts and read more about that. But you need to be with other people who believe the same things for encouragement and strength. And of course, we believe that God helps someone to stand up and hold fast to what his teachings are, so we can be thankful for that.
Let me jump in with just two more examples. There's one fellow, I believe he's up in Michigan someplace, and they were telling the students that they have to call one another by the pronoun or the title that each individual wants. And so he, in mocking the foolishness of this, he demands that he's called Your Majesty. He ends up on television, and people relate to that. There was another individual that stood up, and I forgot exactly the example of that, but you know, writing an editorial, a very fine editorial, well thought out. It shouldn't be just a rant and a raving, but a well thought out editorial that this fellow wrote, and it's all over the internet, or has been in the past, and he's pointing out that he is not going to be drawn into somebody else's fantasy world. Mm-hmm. If Mr. Jenner wants to be in a fantasy world, he said, I'm not going to enter his fantasy world with him. That's a well-stated comment on his part. There may be some flaws in it, but it makes sense. So yeah. Instead of just ranting and raving, he's simply saying, let's think this through.
And I also think, you know, giving in to this nonsensical world of additional pronouns of and zer and whatever, it's an abuse of the language. And pretty soon if we do this, the language dramatically will collapse. Mm-hmm. Ambiguity will reign. And there are a lot of reasons other than just the gender issue to say, you know, these things are going too far and they're going to create damage in our society. Mm-hmm. And so I think, yes, the pushback on the pronoun issue, some people ask, well, what do I do at work if someone demands to be called by a certain pronoun? Well, you know, we could use their name or we could use something else, but to give in and start to acquiesce to this nonsense, and that's what it is, of using all these different terminologies that people are inventing to create a fantasy world.
Nonsense as the norm.
Nonsense as the norm. And I think we need to be saying, you know, with respect, I cannot do that, and the pronouns of the English language are sufficient to convey meaning correctly, and that's what I'm sticking with.
Mm-hmm. And yet at the same time, as we all know, we treat people with respect.
Absolutely.
We don't go along with nonsense, but at the same time, we love those individuals and care for them.
That's true.
Look, we were just in the last minute here, so we need to wrap up. Appreciate our audience being with us as we wrestle with this topic. It's a real pressing issue, one that we all have to deal with because we live in a world where these issues affect our work, our school, when we read the papers or when we go on the internet. It's all around us and can affect our thinking. So very current issue. If you would like to learn more and actually be able to learn more from the insight of individuals like Mr. Hobbitch and Mr. Weston and other writers and speakers, make sure that you subscribe to our YouTube channel, watch some of our telecasts and read some of our articles. Share it with your friends. If you believe in what you're hearing, believe it's important, share it with your friends because it'll help them to understand you as well and what you believe and what you think about it. So last couple of comments here, if you'd each like to make a little summary statement. Mr. Weston, would you like to go first?
Well, I think as I just said, we love all individuals, and frankly, if we don't push back, we're just actually enabling people to be unhappy. The end result is not good, and the facts are there for those who want to know. But there's this group of individuals, whoever they are out there, that are pushing for this, and they're trying to destroy everything. And either we stand up early or we simply get run over. They don't care about law. I've told Mr. Wahovich prior to that, the law is on our side, he's mentioned, but they don't care about law. They don't care about constitutional rights. They care about destroying what we have.
Mr. Hobbitch.
Yes, I would concur with that. And I just think the social order that has been the bulwark of much of the nation's stability for centuries needs to be preserved. It needs to be valued. And if we think we can have the same kind of future as we've had in the as the past has been to us, with stability, peace, and prosperity under this new fragmented social order, we deceive ourselves.
Thank you. And thank you, gentlemen. Thank you to our audience for being with us here today. And come back and see us next week. Again, subscribe or share, and certainly visit again next week as we wrestle with another issue of today. And so again, this is Jonathan McNair with TW Now. And have a good day.